Any last words?
Yeah, I would like to thank Laura John and Eliza of the Oregon Historical Society, and of course, David, as well as being on the show. And I think those are really, hopefully we can take these things back in a positive way. I'm not going to quote directly from some of the private discussion going on in the Portland Native community on social media, but I know that one person who was at the event, the Day of Rage event on Sunday, said that she feels that what is going missing is the are the beautiful speeches the youth gave, how they stood in their ways of knowing and gave voice to it, and how this is being erased because of the back and forth over the optics. And it gives me a lot of hope what Laura is saying and what, you know, Eliza and Dave, maybe we can really focus on what the youth want and maybe provide them some guidance and assistance. So
thank you. And thank all of you also. This is Paul Rowland with the Wednesday Talk Radio. Stay tuned for more great programming here on your community radio station. Support us. This is our fall membership drive. Go to kbo.fm and you'll be directed about how to support us. Thank you.
KBOO Portland. KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show. Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Oregon has had issues with the delivery of and access to mental health services for years. Oregon Measure 110, Drug Decriminalization and Addiction Treatment Initiative, proposes to address many of the issues involved. Today, we are taking a look at these concerns with representatives of the Yes on Measure 110 campaign. As of the time of this taping, we can find no organized opposition to this proposed measure. If you, our listeners, have thoughts to share, please contact us through our website, insidewashco.org, or email me directly at rob@insidewashco.org. Either side, we're interested in all opinions. Our guests today are Anthony Johnson, chief petitioner and longtime drug policy reform activist, along with Amelia Fowler, lead community organizer. Welcome, Amelia. Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm wondering if you both could give us an overview of Measure 110. What is it trying to accomplish?
I'll tackle that first. The main goal of Measure 110 is to move away from treating drug addiction and drug use as a law enforcement issue based upon punishment to a healthcare-based approach based upon treatment and recovery services. So what it does is that it reduces criminal penalties for what's currently a misdemeanor. So low-level possession charges. It doesn't legalize any drugs. Just low-level possession charges will become a civil infraction, and that fine can be waived if you seek a health assessment through a drug treatment recovery center. And the health assessment can allow you to determine whether you have an addiction issue and then have resources made available to you to seek treatment if need be. And we take existing marijuana tax revenue above $45 million that will go towards go towards treatment and recovery services that are funded all over the state. And by not arresting, prosecuting, and jailing people for these minor drug offenses, there'll be vast savings involved as well. And those savings that we experience will also go into the fund to provide for drug treatment and recovery services that we need. So we want to move away from a criminal-based approach to a healthcare-based approach, and that's the main goal of Measure 110.
That makes sense. We might get back to the funding a little bit later. Amelia, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Not too much. Anthony said it beautifully. And I would add that we have over $100 million in cannabis tax revenue in this state. And using it for treatment just makes sense.
You know, the ballot measure includes two proposals, and you kind of covered it when you did the outline for us. What do you say to voters? Perhaps, Amelia, I'll look at you because you're out there talking to people. What do you say to voters who support treatment, see it as a health issue, but don't necessarily support decriminalization?
Yes, that's a great question. And normally what I would begin with is if they are supporting treatment, the majority of people or a good amount of people who are currently incarcerated identify as having substance abuse issues. Mm-hmm. And we know, you know, jail is not a treatment center, and a lot of money is spent on incarcerating people. And we could actually save money if we are creating pathways for people who identify as having problematic substance use or substance abuse issues to streamline them into treatment.
Yeah, if I could just add that part of decriminalizing and reducing criminal penalties for low-level possession is about destigmatizing drug use and making people feel comfortable to get treatment that is available. So we could fund treatment and have it available, but if people are worried about getting arrested or worried about being treated as a criminal or their friends and family thinking that they're criminals, that's just a big barrier to treatment. So it really goes hand in hand, providing the treatment to the people they need, but at the same time, reducing the stigma to where people don't feel like they're a criminal and they're going to get arrested and go to jail.
You know, just taking a little bit of a little turn here, what got each of you to make the choice to be involved in pushing this measure? Anthony?
Yeah, I can start off. I became a criminal justice law reform activist when I was in college at the University of Missouri. I wasn't planning on becoming an activist, but I saw firsthand instances where my Black friends were treated more harshly for drug offenses than my white friends. And it really spurred me to become active, to learn more. And when I went to law school, I practiced criminal defense for 2 years, and I just saw firsthand disparate treatment about on drug cases depending upon how much money you have, what county you get arrested in. And it really just broke my heart to see nonviolent drug offenders get sentenced to prison and not get the treatment they need. And so this really has been a continuation of my life work from a broader policy perspective, but it all started from seeing my Black friends treated more harshly than my white friends for the same drug offenses.
So thank you. Amelia, what led you to get involved in this measure?
So I am passionate about this ballot measure because many of my family members have struggled with addiction. My dad was my primary caregiver, and he struggled with addiction his whole life, but he wanted to get better, and he died of an overdose in November. And as a social worker, I've worked directly with drug users in different capacities, whether that's in treatment or they're still using. I've also worked with currently incarcerated and returning citizens and their families. And so I've seen these communities struggle to find treatment when they're ready. And I've seen them struggle with barrier after barrier if they have a criminal record. And when it comes to reentry, basic needs such as housing and employment are extremely difficult to access. And when someone is ready for treatment here in Oregon, they will have difficulty finding a program. You know, Oregon ranks last in the country when it comes to access to treatment. And what that means is when Oregonians can be waiting for months for drug and alcohol treatment, and we don't have months. Even days can be too long because we actually lose 1 to 2 Oregonians per day to drug and alcohol related deaths. So the need is so urgent, and I know that Oregonians know this.
If the goal is to get folks who are destructively involved with drugs into treatment, what kind of treatment will be utilized? I understand how folks will be evaluated, but I'm concerned about what kind of treatment they will get, the quality of that treatment, and how it will be monitored to determine how effective the programs are.
Yes, so our measure spells out various parameters that the drug treatment recovery services must adhere to about being patient-centered, trauma-informed, culturally sensitive. Mm-hmm. But the most important measure, part of our measure to deal with oversight of treatment is our Oversight and Accountability Council and then follow-up audits. So we set up an Oversight and Accountability Council made up of addiction doctors, researchers, recovery peers, drug treatment providers, people in recovery themselves, mm-hmm. and that council will set up rules around the kind of treatment that must be made available. And there will be a report issued every 2 years based upon an audit from the Secretary of State. So we'll get to know exactly where the funds are going and have benchmarks for success. And so I would say that where the kind of treatment that people are getting now, there's less oversight now and accountability now than there will be under Measure 110. So I think Measure 110 is a great step forward to determine what kind of treatment works, what facilities are doing the best job, and we'll be able to know that and adapt over time because we'll have reports that are made public after public audits.
I'm concerned about how the effectiveness of the treatment that folks are referred to will be measured.
Yeah, and so, you know, there will be rulemaking around that by the Oversight and Accountability Council, and the Secretary of State will conduct audits, and there will be a public report that's made to the legislature and the public. So we'll get a chance to look at it, and we'll be able to see, you know, are we getting an effective return on the revenue that's going towards treatment and recovery services, and how the system could best be adapted to make sure we are getting a good return. But I would say that we're not getting much public reports now, and less accountability and oversight than we'll have under Measure 110. So I think it'll be a great step in the right direction. We may need to adapt over time based upon these public reports, but it really sets in motion a good way for us to know that the money's going to good places and treatment and recovery services are effectively being implemented.
You guys have a strong social media campaign and are making quite an effort to get your message out. How has the current pandemic impacted the way you campaign?
Yeah, I'll let Amelia talk about her volunteer coordination experience in a bit. But I will say, first and foremost, that we've had to move to online because we had to implement safe physical distancing practices. There was no playbook on how to gather signatures and make the ballot during a pandemic. There was no playbook on how to do effective voter and volunteer outreach under a pandemic. So we've had to be very creative and definitely utilize our endorsing partners and definitely go online. And we've definitely leaned upon a lot of young people like Amelia, who have a lot of experience in the online sphere and are tech savvy. And Amelia can talk about more about her volunteer experience and how that's been organized.
Yeah, this has been definitely an experience. As Anthony said, there was no playbook. We're kind of, building the plane while we're flying it. And as far as outreach to volunteers, it's been, I mean, the fact that we have Zoom is amazing. So glad that we have Zoom to do this with, because I'm still able to see faces and talk to people. It's not the same, but I think something that has been a common thread in all of the people that I've spoken to is that they really appreciate that we are We're still organizing. We're still having group volunteer events via Zoom. And because it's really a space for us all to have community right now in this pandemic. And that's what a lot of people are craving. And so it's been really great to be able to use these social media tools like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter to put out when we're having our community, like our volunteer events, so folks can come sit with us on Zoom and phone bank or text bank or have a volunteer award show. Any way that we can celebrate too is very important. We know a lot of people are struggling right now and their capacities are diminished. I think a lot of us, our capacities are diminished. We have a lot of other things going on right now. And I feel as though I do miss certainly being in a room with people. But also, I feel like we're going to take a lot of these parts of organizing virtually move forward with us. I think it's really been helpful in reaching people throughout the state who can't come to an office in Portland. You know what I mean?
Yes. And still, you've had to be creative. And from the sound of it, you guys have been. But, you know, you're a statewide campaign. And these statewide campaigns seem to cost an awful lot of money, even when we're not knocking on doors and when we're restricted by pandemics. How are you guys funded, the campaign? How's the campaign funded?
So we have a mix of national and online and grassroots support. You know, vast majority of our supporters are from Oregon, and we've gotten support all across the state. Nationally, we have been funded by the Drug Policy Alliance, who has a long history in Oregon. They helped fund the original Medical Marijuana Act all the way back in 1998. They're one of our major funders for Measure 91, which legalized cannabis in 2014. They have a long history in this state, and we welcome their support. But a vast majority of our donors are in-state, and it's a lot of the same donors that helped legalize cannabis in 2014, and it allows us to reach a partnership with Unite Oregon and other organizations on the ground who are fighting for every vote all across the state. And like Amelia alluded to, going to Zoom and going online has really kind of put in focus the need to reach everybody all across the state. And we have a goal. Of course, every goal of the campaign is to win, but we want to win everywhere. We don't want to just run up the score in Portland and along the I-5 corridor. We want to win all across the state of Oregon. We want to take this message to everyone that we can. We think that voters understand that the status quo is not working, and there is a better approach to treating drugs and funding drug treatment. And so we are seeing support all across the state and nationally, both financially and willing to volunteer for a measure that can have a great impact on people's lives.
Any additional thoughts, Amelia?
Just reiterate how important it is that we're reaching the entire state and not just along the I-5 corridor. It's really important to us that we're reaching communities that have even less access to treatment than Portland or Salem, anything along the I-5 corridor. And we want them at the table. We want them included. We want to hear what they need.
Well, you talked about access to treatment, and you've also talked about at least $55 million, if not more money from other savings. I heard you. I understand. But when an individual goes through the assessment and is referred for treatment, how do we determine who pays for that? Some individuals will have private insurance. Some individuals will have private means. Some individuals will have probably no resources at all. Are the funds behind this measure going to be distributed equally, whether I have $7 million in the bank or health insurance or nothing at all? Or how does that work, please?
Yeah, so under the measure, if you have private health insurance that covers the treatment, then the private insurance can be billed and reimbursed for the services. If you don't have private insurance, then the cost for the services come out of the cannabis tax revenue, and then additionally the savings the state gets as well. So it all will come out of the fund. So insurance companies can be billed. I imagine over time, if it's found that there are people with means that don't have insurance for whatever reason, that there could be adaptations made to the law to, you know, do some type of means testing. But as written, if you have insurance, insurance gets billed. If you don't have insurance, then it's free of charge that comes out of only the cannabis tax revenue and the savings experience from not arresting and prosecuting and jailing people for these drug offenses. It will not be a tax raise on ordinary Oregonians.
Have you received support from law enforcement? I can see authorities seeking equity and justice, as well as more jail space for other issues, being supported. Yet I suspect some consider the measure as one that might be sending the wrong message about drug use to kids or have other negative consequences from their point of view. Out in the field, Amelia, when you've been talking to folks, what have you got back from law enforcement?
We have members from law enforcement that are absolutely in support of this measure because they've seen firsthand that when you're arresting people for a small possession of drugs, it's generally because they have a substance abuse or addiction issue. And sending them to jail and then having them have a criminal record after that, as Anthony mentioned earlier, I mean, that's stigmatizing. And that is going to, not only is it the criminal record going to be a barrier to getting their life back on track once they're out, they can't, there's a lot of housing that they don't have access to. And also if they're putting that they have a criminal record on a rental application, that's not good. And employment as well. And as far as the stigma goes, I mean, if we're criminalizing addiction, that's not going to make it easier for these people to get help. And I think that law enforcement see on the ground, much like I do as a social worker, not that I'm saying they're the same thing, but they see on the ground how these drug policies are not working.
And I'd like to add that we have three current district attorneys that support our measure. Mike Schmidt in Multnomah County, Matt Ellis in Wasco County, and John Hummel in Deschutes County. The Washington County Justice Initiative has endorsed the measure, and we also have the unanimous endorsement of the AFSCME Union, and 10% of their membership are corrections officers. And so we're seeing more and more people who work in law enforcement, both current and former, recognize that the status quo is not working and it's time for a better approach in how we treat addiction.
Sticking with law enforcement for just a moment, should this measure pass, do you anticipate any relief, like charges expunged, for those folks sentenced under previous laws, similar to the calls to expunge marijuana charges in states that legalized cannabis? What do you think? Will that happen?
I imagine that it will happen. You know, that's not included in our measure. You know, when you work on a measure, you have to make sure it meets constitutional muster, and there's a lot of hoops to jump through. But after we legalized cannabis in 2014, expungement provisions were added after the fact that allowed for old marijuana offenses to be expunged from the record. And I think after decriminalizing personal amounts, you'll see a similar movement in the Oregon legislature to allow the expungement of old drug offenses, just because it's just costly for the state to deprive people of their economic and educational housing opportunities for something that happened 10, 20 years ago. And now you have somebody that wants to get licensed or go to school and to block off ways for them to be productive citizens is just just too disruptive, and it's bad for them, and it's bad for the state. And we think that there'll be definitely be a movement at the legislature to allow for the expungement and allow people to get this off the record after they stayed out of trouble for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it may be, and to really fully give them a second chance.
We've talked about so many benefits that you see in this measure. And we've talked in terms of discrimination, how it can help to alleviate the unfair application of laws across racial lines. I'm wondering, recently, in response to the overdose epidemic in Canada, according to the Washington Post report They said, quote, "Now a growing chorus, including top public health officials, the Premier of British Columbia, and the nation's police chiefs, they're all calling on Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to decriminalize the possession of illicit drugs for personal use. Do you think this measure will have an effect of any kind on the OxyContin epidemic here in Oregon?"
Oh, I mean, I think definitely just increasing treatment and reducing the stigma around drug use and letting people know that they shouldn't be treated like criminals, I think will have a great impact on the OxyContin overdoses. We're seeing a resurgence in meth use and those complications. So I think just by providing treatment and providing avenue for people to go towards will be a huge plus in combating our overdose epidemic and our addiction crisis. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of people seek a health assessment so they get the fine waived, and they don't really think they have an addiction issue. But after they go through the health assessment, it might open their eyes to their addiction issues that they do have and realize they've been using drugs to cope in various ways, and they'll be able to seek treatment before their addiction crisis goes out of control. So I think by reducing the stigma, not treating people like criminals, funding more treatment and recovery services, you'll definitely see a reduction in overdose deaths in Oregon.
If this measure passes, will staff be hired to monitor, to evaluate, and to deliver the services?
Yeah, so we are dedicated to fighting for every vote in the state, and we're not taking victory this November for granted. But if we do manage to be victorious, like we hope and expect to be, because we are fighting for every vote all across the state, yes, we do plan to have staff hired to help with the implementation process, both on the criminal justice side as well as the drug treatment and recovery side, to make sure it's implemented effectively and the will of the voters are enacted.
Could you talk a little bit more about the racial disparities that exist now in the arrests that are uptaken and what this measure can possibly do to decrease the racial disparities?
Yeah, unfortunately, people of color, particularly Black and Indigenous Oregonians, disproportionately are harmed by drug arrests, convictions, and the consequences of those convictions, be it the sentence, be it the length of probation, be it the fine. It disproportionately harms people of color. And this measure will vastly reduce those racial disparities. It will decrease drug possession arrests of Black and Indigenous Oregonians by about 95%. And so not only will fewer people be arrested, jailed, prosecuted, but that's more people with educational, employment, and housing opportunities. So our drug laws have disproportionately harmed people of color. So Measure 110 will disproportionately help people of color who have been harmed by the current status quo.
Anthony, I just wonder, do you suspect that when you look at the number of people, should this measure pass, that are evaluated and referred to treatment, do you think there'll be racial disparities there?
So the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission and their report stated that Measure 110, they expect it to nearly eliminate racial disparities. And so it'll be vastly reduced from what it is today. Now, we can't promise that Measure 110 is going to end systemic racism altogether, but it will vastly improve that. And I think that these resources will be available to everybody. And so Black and Indigenous Oregonians are more likely to be arrested, more likely to be charged, and are more likely to lack the resources to get effective treatment. They're going to be definitely helped under this measure, and we'll see a vast reduction in the racial disparities all throughout our criminal justice system.
Well, what I'm hearing that really pleases me is the recognition that it's not just a go for 6 weeks to an inpatient place or an outpatient place and you're done and everything's great. You're following the whole treatment continuum from start, problem area if you like, all the way to successful recovery, not just abstinence. So it seems to me it's pretty comprehensive. Anthony, one of the things that comes to mind is if someone's gone through the health assessment in Measure 110, of course, after it passes, and they go through whatever treatment is recommended, what if they come back? Are they allowed a second health assessment? What happens to people who come back?
Yeah, so under Measure 110, for the lowest level offense, so personal possession, that's currently a misdemeanor, that penalty never increases. So it does remain the same. The health assessment's available. Access to treatment is available. Now, if somebody continues down more of a wrong path and starts possessing more, driving under the influence, selling or, you know, stealing to feed their habit, crimes like that, those crimes will still remain and be criminal offenses, and like mandatory treatment could be mandated for those. But if you are a personal, somebody who just possesses a personal amount, you know, the small amounts, the law does not change for you. It's the same fine and the same health assessment and treatment is always available to you.
Great. And of course, the results of that assessment may change over time when that person comes back. They may need a different kind of treatment, different term of treatment, et cetera.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So the health assessment can be different. They may, you know, go to a different place that fits their needs better, or they can just kind of learn more about themselves, about where their trajectory is headed. And so hopefully if somebody has an addiction issue, the more health assessment they have, eventually they'll realize they need to seek treatment, and that treatment will be provided to them. And I do think that will be a better avenue for them to get the help they need than arresting, jailing them, taking away their housing, employment, and educational opportunities.
Amelia, Anthony, I want to thank you very much for taking the time and sharing your involvement in this campaign, the reasons you're behind this campaign, and how you've been doing. Thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
Good evening. Good morning.